Thank you. We'd like to thank Professor Helen Stokes-Lampard, who is RCGP Chair of Council, who's introducing this programme around the implementation of genomic medicine into mainstream primary care. We're going to be looking at the barriers, the challenges and opportunities and potential benefits of genomic medicine. My name is Dr. Imran Rafi. I'm a GP in Surrey and I co-medical direct RCGP Clinical Innovation and Research. And I'd like to introduce my co-joint RCGP Clinical Champion for Genomics, Dr. Jude Hayward. Jude.
My name is Jude Hayward. I'm a salaried GP. I am a GPSI in genetics and genomics within the Yorkshire and Humber Genomics Medicine Centre. And I'm also primary care advisor to Health Education England Genomics Education Programme. I would like to add my thanks to Health Education England Genomics Education Programme for sponsoring this podcast.
So the purpose really of this podcast is to introduce the concepts around genomic medicine, highlight the clinical delivery and the potential implications for primary care. So I'd like to hand over to Jude to just start off with a typical patient that we might come across in practice. Jude.
A patient comes in to tell you that her aunt has been diagnosed with the BRCA2 gene. She shows you a report which states there is a pathogenic variant in the BRCA2 gene and asks you to refer her for testing. This is a genomics test result and immediately raises the question of what genomics is and what we in primary care need to understand in order to care for our patients. I'm going to start by talking about the RCGP curriculum statement, Genetics in Primary Care. This identifies three main roles for primary care: identifying patients with or at risk of a genetic condition, clinical management of genetic conditions, and communicating genetic information. What is the study of genetics? Genetics focuses on DNA coding for single functional genes, the units of inheritance, and each gene is a chunk of DNA separated by non-coding DNA. A gene codes for a protein which has a particular function in the body. It can be helpful to use the words recipe or instruction when explaining a gene to a patient. However, we're now in the genomics era. So what is genomics? Genomics is the study of the entirety of our DNA, genes and non-coding DNA, as well as RNA and the allied technologies that go with this. Rapidly advancing technologies and several drivers, which Imran will discuss later in the podcast, are leading to the mainstreaming of genomics into clinical care, the new discipline of genomics medicine. The report talks about a variant in a gene, so what is a gene variant? In a typical genome, there could be 5 million variants. The majority are single nucleotide polymorphisms or changes, affecting the DNA at the level of the nucleotide bases. Genomic sequencing is the technology that enables the reading of the order of the four bases that make up DNA. The variants can be pathogenic, benign, or of unknown significance. The term pathogenic variant is replacing the term mutation, meaning a disease-causing variant. In the case of variants of unknown significance, there is not sufficient data or information to determine whether the variant is pathogenic or benign. Variants of unknown significance are becoming increasingly common with genomic technology and can leave a patient in an area of uncertainty. There will be more discussion about this later in the podcast. So what do we as GPs need to know about genomics? Health Education England's Genomics Education Programme has outlined its education strategy for primary care, engaging primary care, launching with an educational needs assessment specific to genomics with the aim to inform the development of an educational curricula and resources. One of the outputs is a Delphi survey which has achieved expert consensus regarding knowledge, skills and attitudes needed by primary care practitioners in the genomics era. It highlights that genomics issues will continue to broadly surface through family history, patients requesting testing or a clinical situation suggesting testing, and recognition of clinical clues or red flags. It's not anticipated that we as GPs will require substantial additional expertise, as we already have core communication skills and knowledge and skills of genetics, which will equip us to deal with genomics issues. An example of this is risk assessment through taking a family history, one of the cornerstones in primary care. We in primary care will not need an in-depth knowledge of genomics, but we will require an understanding of the terminology, principles underpinning its use in clinical care, and ethical issues that may surface in order for us to communicate effectively and support patients and institute appropriate management. We will need to understand the types of genomic tests, which are available on the NHS, their implications and limitations, and how they affect clinical care. They can be used to guide diagnosis, prescribing, treatment and management. And they can also be used in defining risk and dividing common complex diseases such as cancer and diabetes into subtypes. We also need to be aware of the effect on patients and their families, including their effect on reproductive choices. So to return to the report, our patient who comes in with a report saying that there's a pathogenic variant in the BRCA2 gene in her aunt. We need to know how to action, whether to refer, and the patient may ask us to explain what that report means to them. So a few more terms. What is an exon? An exon is a coding segment of DNA, and there are several exons within each gene. The exome is the entirety of the coding DNA. So an exome is the entirety of coding DNA throughout the genome. What is a phenotype? The clinical characteristics which will come through in a person as a result of a genomic variant. There are several different types of genetic and genomic testing available. It may be diagnostic, it may be carrier testing, it may be predictive. So if there is a known genomic variant within a family, an asymptomatic person within that family, someone who has not developed cancer or ischemic heart disease or whatever the example is, they can be tested to see if they carry the variant. I'm going to hand back over to Imran now. He's going to talk a little bit more about genomics and environment and also more about the drivers behind genomics era and genomics medicine.
Thank you, Jude. So the common conditions that we see in general practice obviously include the common complex disorders such as diabetes, cancer and heart disease. And clearly these are multifactorial in their etiology. So environmental factors such as lifestyle, as well as random factors, interact with genetic factors to provide a complex pattern of susceptibility. So genomic technologies are going to help us to fine map the genetic contribution to these diseases, and these should be delineated from so-called Mendelian or single gene conditions, where one genetic factor provides the bulk of the risk. So conditions such as Huntington's disease or cystic fibrosis are examples, but it is important to remember that some subgroups of common diseases also have a strong inherited etiology, such as familial cancer syndromes, such as the one that Jude presented. The recording, sharing and implementation of the use of such information into clinical medicine will be of great challenge and also potential benefit in terms of a greater understanding of biochemical pathways, pharmacogenetics, genotyping of diseases, diagnosis and therapeutics. So let's just consider what the impetus for our discussions around genomics is at the present time. There is a project called the 100,000 Genomes Project, which is a hybrid clinical research venture which is currently being undertaken through Genomics England Limited, or GEL, and this has been funded by the Department of Health. This will offer whole genome sequencing to NHS patients with certain rare diseases or cancer, as well as infectious diseases. This work is a partnership between the NHS, academic community and industry. There are four main aims: to create an ethical and transparent program based on consent, to bring benefit to patients and set up a genomic medicine service for the NHS, to enable new scientific discovery and medical insights, and to kickstart the development of a UK genomics industry. For rare diseases, the genomics of healthy family members will be used for comparison, and in cancer, the germline genomes of the patient and their cancer will be compared. So GPs might be asked in any of these scenarios to discuss the results that patients or their relatives receive. Underpinning this all is the advances in sequencing technology that allows the whole genome to be read, i.e. all the bases, so that much larger scale interpretation of genetic variation and its attendant risks or benefits can be done more than was previously possible. Clinical utility will be an important factor in the offer of genomic sequencing through accredited laboratories, and economic analysis of clinical pathways will be necessary. There will be important points about clarifying who we should be sequencing, how much of the genome is sequenced, and how should individual genomic data be stored so that it's also available if necessary to relatives. Tackling such ethical and social issues will help define the legacy of the 100,000 Genomes Project. So having said all this, we just need to consider what sort of information is likely to flow into primary care and I'll hand over to Jude to explain this. Thank you, Jude.
Patients are recruited to the 100,000 Genome Project through the clinician whose care they would normally be for that condition. For instance, a patient with Parkinson's disease and a significant family history which fits the eligibility criteria would be recruited and consented by their neurology team, often or usually with the support of a 100,000 Genomes Project nurse. The results would then be fed back to them via their clinician, the neurology team. In primary care, patients may come with their own results for further discussion, or they may bring the results of a family member, as illustrated by the BRCA2 report that we used as an example at the beginning. Within the 100,000 Genome Project, they, or their parents, can also decide whether they want to look for specific so-called additional findings in their genomic code. So let's just look at another couple of terms. Pertinent findings. This means that there is a pathogenic gene variant or genomic variant which is the recognised cause of the disorder or the presenting clinical features. There may be additional findings which are unrelated to the presenting clinical condition. Some of these may be deliberately looked for, so-called additional looked for findings. These are genomic findings that are known to cause serious conditions for which there is good evidence for clinical action to be taken. An example would be those that affect the person themselves, such as a genomic variant for familial hypercholesterolemia or familial adenomatous polyposis, which is a colorectal cancer syndrome. Or it may have implications for future generations. They may come showing a carrier status for a condition such as cystic fibrosis. One of the challenges faced by projects such as the 100,000 Genome Project or any genome sequencing is the need to have a clear evidence-based genomic testing policy that prevents overdiagnosis from inappropriately considering a variant as pathogenic when it's not. With a shift from identifying specific genes to genome-wide sequencing, the detection of variants of unknown significance will become increasingly common and problematic. I've mentioned testing within the 100,000 Genome Project. Genomic testing within routine clinical care will also increase. Within genomics medicine centres, testing is increasingly carried out via gene panels. These are simultaneous testing of multiple genes, sections of the genome indicated by clinical symptoms, but not the whole genome. This does reduce the chance of additional findings or the findings of variants of unknown significance. Gene panels currently exist for many conditions, including cancer, cystic fibrosis, hereditary cardiac conditions. The broader the panel, the greater the chance of finding something that is actually incidental or a variant of unknown significance. Imran, can you tell us a little bit more about determining pathogenicity, how laboratories would decide whether a variant is pathogenic or not?
Of course. So pathogenicity tells us about what the potential clinical implications of the gene variant is and whether it's likely to cause significant clinical disease in the future or not. And this is going to be supported by accessing scientifically based public genome databases that have curated gene variants through whole genome sequencing. So, for example, in the case of familial hypercholesterolemia, which is an autosomal dominant condition, there have been over 1,000 gene variants that have been identified. And the reliance on good familial hypercholesterolemia variant databases are exemplified, such as that maintained by University College London. And this is important both in terms of recording accurate data, but also in identifying pathogenic and benign variants. There are international guidelines on how to determine pathogenicity, which can be a very technical process. In rare diseases, for example, effort is focused on determining whether a gene variant is pathogenic disease-causing or a benign variant of no clinical significance, as Jude has mentioned. In complex diseases, the focus is on susceptibility gene variants. There are variants which may also be of uncertain significance when data to determine pathogenicity are insufficient. And in these cases, there may be a need to revisit databases when new information accrues. So the clinical utility of a genetic test, the penetrance, the gene expression, the gene modifiers, epigenetics, and the environment all affect the clinical validity of a genetic test and its use. The offer of a genetic test for prediction, prenatal testing, and or diagnosis in the UK currently follows the ACE model, which stands for analytical validity, clinical validity, clinical utility, ethical, legal and social implications of the test. And this has been occurring until recently through the UK Genetic Testing Network. However, it's unlikely that this model will be fit for purpose as vast amounts of genomic information accrues. So in summary, determining the pathogenicity of variants identified either through whole genome sequencing or whole exome sequencing technologies is going to be challenging and will require curation of databases. So what's the potential impact of all this on primary care? Well, genomic issues may present on primary care in many different ways, some of which have been mentioned already. These include cancer, familial cancer, rare disease, infectious disease, prescribing and subtyping of disease. We're going to move on to discuss this in more detail in the next section.